Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hultgren, along with Nick Bailing. And Andy Bailing is actually on the show, but in a moment of transparency, I will let you know that we actually did most of the show on Monday. And then if you've been following along, you know that this has been an ever-changing situation. So we figured we would wait to do whatever's going to happen next weekend, the last possible second on Friday. So that is where we are right now. So it is just Nick and I at this point. Then we're going to talk to Ryan Bader. And then after Ryan Bader, you will get the rest of the show, which includes Andy, who I promise is on the show. So with that, let's just reset for a second. So Sunday night during the AFC Championship game, we learned that Cain Velasquez has hurt his back. We now know that he's prepped for surgery and he will be out for 4 weeks, unable to do anything while he's recuperating from whatever this surgery is for a sciatic nerve going down his back. So he steps out, and it was going to be Verdum and a contender, to be named later. 5 minutes later, that contender's name was Stipe Miocic. So Monday when we did the show, we talked about all of these smart things that Stipe could do to win the championship on 2 weeks' notice, only to find out that Fabricio Verdum also hurt and decided that he was going to tough it out for Cain, but if it's Stipe, not so much, which raises a lot of questions, Nick. The first of is this champion just being totally strategic? Like, I don't really, Stipe is a dangerous opponent, I don't want to take him on 2 weeks' notice. Or the other one I heard that I have not talked to you off air, I'm going to spring this on you. The other one I heard is that he was getting points on the pay-per-view. And what that means is if you don't think Stipe is a draw, you're not going to get as many points heretofore. You're not going to make the $1.1 million or whatever that I had read he was going to get by fighting Cain. What are your thoughts on him saying, yeah, Cain, I'm injured, but I'll take Cain, no on Stipe?
The points part is the most logical for me. You know, his excuse of why, I don't want to call it an excuse. I'll say it's the reason. He could have been saying, I am going to go into this. He's 38. I'm just pulling that one out of the top of my head.
I think so. I'll look up while you're talking.
Yeah. So he's 38 now, and he's looking at 3, maybe 4 more paydays. And as the champ, how many of those do you get? And do you get points if you're not the champ anymore?
I don't know, but you get points for pulling his age out of your ass because he's 38. So
so that's the thing, though, is he's looking at, I mean, he's, people might say he's in his prime right now, but he doesn't have very many more years left. And if he's going to be taking a payday, he needs him to be a big payday so that he's going to walk off into retirement.
Well, and I know you have kind of reignited my fandom for Fighter and the Kid. I've always liked that podcast, but your excitement about it has gotten me to consume it as they come out. I was consuming a couple at a time, but if you listened this week, Brendan Schaub was talking about prior, they recorded Monday and Wednesday. In the Monday episode, he was talking about how he thought, and it told Brian Callen, that he thought the heavyweight division was in trouble because there's too many old dudes. And on top of too many old dudes, you have two of your main fan draws in Matt Mitrione and Alistair Overeem who don't have contracts right now, and that the industry as a whole in the heavyweight division in the UFC is in trouble. And then all of this happens, and you've got a guy who's 38 who, yeah, okay, if he wants to get a payday, that makes sense. However, you're still out for as long as Cain is out.
Well, yeah.
Because that's your payday, right? Maybe Overeem I think Overeem's a decent payday. People are going to tune into that. I don't deny the fact that Stipe's probably not a fan favorite. I'm going to give you $60 to see him fight, because off the top of my head, somebody can correct me on Facebook or Twitter, I don't know how many pay-per-views, if any, he's co-main evented, let alone I don't think he's main evented anything, let alone co-main evented. So there's some truth into the inability to be a draw.
And I think I have a hard time looking into that too, because it was not even a choice of whether I'd get that pay-per-view or not. Of course I would. Like, that Stipe fight is just as interesting to me as the Cain fight. I saw the Cain fight already, so I was actually a little bit refreshed that it's not like Andy was saying that you'll about guaranteed rematches. I don't want to see them every single time someone loses the title getting a guaranteed rematch on
it. But you would agree, though, that you're a a hyper consumer of this product. So therefore, you know, you and I would be excited about Stipe because we're like, oh yeah, there's a new guy in the mix. But maybe as we, and if you're listening to the show for maybe the first or second time, I'm going to say this and it might sound disparaging. I don't mean it to be disparaging, but it's just a differentiation. The Buffalo Wild Wings fan, right? The guy who goes to the bar and just wants to watch fighting might not be able to do, or not be able to be interested in doing that for a guy that they don't really know.
Well, yeah, that's exactly. I mean, I might be a little bit blind to what a person that just enjoys this on a consumer level. I say that I get a little bit obsessive about it.
Right.
So.
Right, for sure. So that is where we are with that at this point. It is no longer a pay-per-view. So if you were excited about UFC 197, I want to let you know that's also been canceled and renamed UFC 196. So Conor McGregor and RDA and Miesha Tate and Holly Holm is UFC 196 now, not 197. So there will be a new 197, and we'll sequentially fix this. I'm assuming because of the weird hole that they have, the weird hole that they have between UFC 150 and 152, right? Because 151 is canceled, and they never really did a 151, right? Well, the John Jones, Dan Henderson.
Well, and I was actually just going to bring that up because it's interesting to see that Dana White didn't go and put him on blast like he did
John Jones
when that whole thing went down. And that was the same thing. Here's an opponent. He gets hurt. I'm going to offer you the replacement. I'm not going to take that replacement. And he was like, I mean, he was just made into the enemy at that time.
Hindsight being 20/20, though, Nick, we now know all of the drama that was going on behind the scenes with John Jones and all the stuff that was happening. So maybe he's worth the pain in the ass factor from the pay-per-view buys. He's not worth it when he totally tanks an entire pay-per-view and all of the fighters behind him that don't get paid, right? Now, this is a little bit different because, and this is probably why they're not on blast, right? All of these guys still get to fight except for Cain and Verdum. They all get moved to Fox Sports 1. So Super Bowl weekend, you will get a free card headlined by Johnny Hendricks and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, which I think is a fun fight. And I think, you know, when we get into breaking it down in a week, Wonderboy is going to be a problem for Hendricks. I think the reach alone and the kickboxing prowess and the way in which he strikes, I think could be problematic for Hendricks, which makes that fight interesting, even if you don't know who Wonderboy is. But right now, that's where we are. UFC 196 is still a thing. UFC 197 has been moved to 196. You need a flowchart for this. We'll put it on Facebook, I promise. The actual card of UFC 196 is now a Fox Sports 1 card headlined by Hendricks and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Got it? Awesome. Okay, the other bit of news that I wanted to get to that is late breaking is this on-again, off-again relationship. I put it on our Facebook page last night and had to re-put it up today because GSP, there was a story last night on Twitter that he is coming back. Announcement pending. Well, he and his management have a panic attack and reach out to Ariel Helwani this morning and go, that is not true. There's still a whole bunch of things that need to happen before that's going to happen. So we are not making an announcement in the pending days. Here's what I think might be happening, because we've got plenty of time here, Nick, before UFC 200. And you now have Conor McGregor and RDA are on 196. Who knows what's going to happen if Conor will be healthy enough to fight Uriah Faber, an angry grizzly bear, whatever he's going to fight at UFC 200. We don't know about Holly Holm either, right? If she gets injured, she's not fighting Ronda, so she might not be on there. People would pay money. I am not saying I want to see this. Okay, so let's start there. But people would pay an ass ton of money to watch GSP and Lawler.
Yeah.
They're going to go all in on that.
That wasn't even a concept that I would think about.
Well, what else would he do? I mean, like, you know, when you talk about Verdum being in his twilight of his years, not that George is that old. I think he's close, 35, 36 maybe. But he's not going to come back. He'd never lost the title. If Dominic Cruz gets to come back and fight for the title, George has to fight a contender fight. Not, yeah. Again, I'm not in for any of this. I think it's a terrible idea. Howsoever, unlike BJ Penn, like BJ Penn should not get a title shot. He didn't leave with the belt. George left with the belt. So to me, it only makes sense that it would be Lawler and it would be UFC 200.
Yeah, I mean, sure, I'd take that. I mean, you'd watch it.
That's what I'm saying. You'd watch it. I don't think it's wise, and I don't care what George has been doing. As we said in the earlier iteration of this week's show, you know, times are changing, and taking time off is not a great idea. And he took time off in the most dangerous weight class. The most dangerous weight class, because these guys are all going to war. You're seeing all of these fights at welterweight being really damn close to the at the time. So all of these guys have to go 15 minutes or 25 minutes, depending on what they're doing, and just get brutalized. And that was why he left. So, I mean, if you thought Johnny Hendricks beat you around the octagon enough that you thought it was time to leave, what do you think Robbie Lawler is going to do to you?
Well, I mean, two of the best minds that I've seen in the UFC are Dominick Cruz and GSP. And I'd say
I would argue follow closely by Connor, but we can prove that one later.
Yeah, sure. And that's if he can prove anything, if geez, I'm losing my train of thought here.
Lawler.
No, not
GSP.
No, the other one I just said.
Dominick Cruz.
Thank you. We got it. We'll make it work.
I'll just go down the roster. We'll get to it.
Yeah. So if Dominick Cruz can prove that he ring rust really isn't a thing, you know, maybe we are not giving GSP enough credit and he is ready to step into it. Maybe he did need to get dialed in and what he needed. It wasn't a physical injury, but he was claiming mental. He was claiming that he was becoming obsessed with it.
Yeah, you know? Well, and when you listen to Firas Sahabi talk, I mean, I wouldn't want to live like that. There's no way I wouldn't. If you read George's book, if there is a fighter on earth of sound mind, and I don't mean that to be like a knock. I just think you've got to have something a little bit off to want to do this as a living. Because if you read George's book, even the first 50 pages, and you think that regiment sounds amazing, fighting's for you. You should totally do that. Because I read that and went, there is no way I want to do that. No way that I want every minute of my day planned out for infinity. I mean, that's what he did when he was in the UFC, was every minute of every day was planned out to infinity with very little fun built into that. So, of course, he wants to take a mental break. That's totally fine. I don't disagree with you that he's got the highest fight IQ probably in the sport. Probably. The difference between him and Dominick Cruz is Dominick Cruz was not beat from wall to wall, post to post, in battle after battle after battle after decision after decision. Dominick Cruz ran the table, blew his knee out. Dominick Cruz came back, ran the table, and you know now he's got plantar fasciitis, not a career-ending injury, right? So he's got to do some healing, but he's not been in those battles. And when you're going to welterweight, you are not. It's not speed. It's not footwork. It's not technique. It's not disappearing when the guy thinks the punch is going to be. There's nobody in welterweight missing 299 shots on your dome. That's not happening at welterweight. But it's happening in Cruz's thing. And so I think there's a little bit of a difference between not their fight IQ. I would argue that you're probably right. They're the two best. I think Cruz has taken far less damage than George has.
100% agree with you on that one. And it's I would have. You know, I think maybe 3 months ago when we were talking about this and GSP leaving, and it was one of the times when he came back.
Right.
And, you know, you broke the news, and by the time I even read it, the news was already broken that he didn't say that he was coming back. I was saying I'd love to see him just float off into the sunset and just, you know, be the guy that did it. He was the one that got out when he wanted to. Mm-hmm. It was on his terms. He was the champ until he left. And, you know, I'm just saying if he comes back, I'm going to watch.
I think everyone will watch, but I was happy when they put him in Captain America. I thought, okay, the Marvel Universe is ginormous. I don't know if the Leaper is going to be a character that they can use a lot, but put a mask on him, make him a different character. I don't know, but like that seemed what you should do. Look at Gina Carano, right? She got out when the getting was good. She did what she needed to do, got annihilated by Cyborg. I get all that. But then parlayed it into, I mean, she's in Deadpool, guys. Like, she figured it out. And I would have liked, and, you know, we're still putting the cart in front of the horse at this point, but I would have liked George to stay away if, in fact, he's going to announce that he's going to fight whenever that's going to be. But if he's going to fight, the only logical thing that makes sense to me is 200. That's the only thing that would make sense to me.
Yeah.
Because that seems big enough for him to come back. You know, and I know the UFC lost their battle in New York, so it obviously, it's not like he could come back later in the year and do an MSG card, which there would be some draw to that too. So if that's not a possibility this year, which I don't think it will be with the latest court ruling, the only thing that makes sense to me is UFC 200 if he's coming back. And the only thing that would make sense if you're going to do that would be one of two things. And one of those guys is already taken. It would be Anderson and GSP, but Anderson's got Bisping, or it would be Lawler and GSP for the title.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the last thing I would want to see for this is for him to come back because of money purposes. You were talking about the Marvel Universe. Maybe that dried up faster than he thought he would. Maybe sure. there'd be more roles than he thought there'd be.
But you would wouldn't you think though, Nick, that they would find a spot? I mean, I know they've had some tenacious relationships as of late, but they found a space for Hughes. They found a space for the Iceman. They can't find a space for GSP.
Yeah, Andy and I have talked about that before. The spaces, how many spaces can they possibly have, you know?
Well, but I mean, when you're talking about broadcast and you want to go global, you've got a guy who speaks French. There has to be a space for the smartest guy in your sport to do commentary if you go to France, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, and I would
any place else that speaks French or can speak French.
I would even if he was a broadcaster in English, he speaks like a robot, but I love it. I'd love to hear him talking on there. So, yeah, in French, I'm sure it's even more fluent and better than
I'm sure it's better than he speaks in English. Okay. All right. We got to talk to Ryan Bader. He is fighting this weekend at UFC on Fox. He's going to be taking on Anthony Rumble Johnson. So we'll do that right now. Ryan Bader is on the line. Ryan, how are you?
What's going on, Eric?
I'm doing fantastic. We are talking over each other, which is exciting. How was your how was the photo shoot?
It was all right. Yeah, just getting it all done this morning. I have the rest of the day where we'll just get a workout in. I'm here in New Jersey, so I want to go to New York and just kill some time a little bit. And then, that's it. So we've got a few things that we need to do media-wise and hanging out in the hotel.
So, Ryan, one of the things that I don't think the fans quite grasp is just, you know, not necessarily how difficult it is to be a fighter, which is clearly a difficult way to make a living. But can you talk just for a second to them about how difficult this week is? You know, so on top of trying to cut weight, stay in shape, keep loose, keep ready to go and primed at the right moment, you have to do all of these other obligations. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the mental fortitude it takes to kind of get through media week?
Yeah, you know, you always have something on your mind, which is the fight, you know, and you're going through different emotions. And then, you know, we get there Tuesday before, and, you know, we have things to do from Wednesday on, you know, while cutting weight, you know, we have media obligations, we have interviews, we have photo shoots, and to the point where, you know, you got to put on your stuff and shadow box and get pictures, you know. So we got to get all that in, you know, while concentrating on your fight, while trying to get a workout in, while cutting weight, eating healthy, and trying to keep your mind, you know, occupied and off of just obsessing about the fight and overthinking stuff, you know. And so it's definitely an emotional roller coaster of a week. It's crazy. And then you almost turn into a different person. And, you know, and your corner men have been with you for a while, and so they know that too. And then after the fight, it's crazy because then you're back to yourself and you look back and wonder why you were like that all week. It's crazy.
So you've been doing these interviews for like an hour and a half. Like what is your trick for not being like an asshole at this point? Because you've answered the same question for an hour. Like, how do you, how do you not?
Well, yeah. No, I woke up this morning. We started at 9 a.m. here. We flew in last night, but I did a photo shoot. I did some in camera, you know, interviews that'll show in the arena, you know, kind of talking smack, do they lead up, whatever. And then went into an hour of media calls, and then I have 20 minutes on social media as far as like a Periscope deal with the UFC. So I put it all in a block, you know, and so once I get it all done, I'm done. And then I can move on. You know, I have some other stuff later at like 3. And so I would have to do these interviews and then go eat, or like if we went into New York or something, try to kill some time, I'd have to come back to do a 20-minute thing on Periscope. So I like to just get it all done and then be able to just relax and not have to think about it. Because, you know, every time you're talking about the fight, just like I was saying, going through the emotions of the week, you start to get those, whether it's butterfly, nervous energy or whatnot, you get those going again, you know. And so it's definitely a mental game.
And, you know, that's the one thing that I wanted to talk to you about. I mean, and we will get to talking about the fight because I'm super excited for this. But it's clear to me, looking at you as a fighter, you know, going from the Ultimate Fighter 8 to where you all are today, it appears to me, obviously you and I don't know each other at all, but it appears to me observationally that after that Glover Teixeira fight, something happened with you, and it's almost like you're Neo in the Matrix. Like, you've figured out this division and how to solve different puzzles. You're on a 5-fight win streak, which is incredible at this division. Can you talk to me, you know, if you even are aware of the change, like, what happened after that fight that you've been able to string these things together and continually show people that you deserve the respect and certainly deserve the title shot?
Yeah, you know, a lot of it was just experience and my skills catching up to me. Because, you know, I came off as a wrestler. When I first started fighting, I fought pretty quickly. As far as started training, striking even. A couple months later, I was in a, you know, I had a fight. And so I kind of learned in the biggest organization, you know, how to fight. And everything, which is crazy, you know. But I think after the Glover fight, you know, after I had him, you know, even, you know, he came up to me later and was like, man, I thought you were just a wrestler, you know, you rocked me with that head kick, rocked me with this, and I was just thinking to myself, man, I almost had that, and it is actually, I'm a competitor, you know, and so we changed things as far as, you know, being more patient and getting more technical, head movement, footwork, but most importantly, I think the biggest thing mentally was I just started believing in myself and knowing that I can go out there and beat anybody. You know, whereas earlier in my career, I'd be fighting like a rampage. I'd be like, man, I don't know. I watched this guy fight. I don't know if I can beat this guy. What am I going to do?
Right.
You know, which there's weird things go through your head anyway for a fight. You know, you get weird on yourself. But now I know that I'm going to go in there and fight. And we laugh at it and joke about it. And, you know, with my corner man, you know, we're always, you know, I remember fighting, or I was a corner man and my buddy Aaron Sips was fighting UFC in Detroit. And we were joking around. We're like, I looked over and he could barely eat his breakfast. I was like, hey, Canada's right there, man. Just make a run for it. You don't have to do this. What are you doing getting a fifth fight today for, you know? And so a lot of it's just mental. I started believing in myself. I could beat anybody in the world. And it just kind of took off from there.
So this weekend, Ryan, you are taking on Anthony Rumble Johnson. And I'm sure you may have heard this at least once, if not 1,000 times. Toughest fight to date, right? How many times have you heard that today? Probably a million.
Yeah, a bunch.
How was the camp for you? I mean, for all appearances, it seemed like it went well. How are you feeling, and what are you expecting out of this fight?
I'm very, very healthy, which is the most important thing. Usually you're not. You know, usually you have something. Last fight with Rashad, I was healthy, and then fight week on I was doing open workouts, and I kicked my my striking coach's elbow, and I almost broke my foot. My whole foot was swollen and purple, and I had to go in the fight with that, you know. And so right now I'm perfectly healthy, and I'm going to keep it that way, and I'm going to feel great. Training camp went awesome. We changed a few things here and there because it's a five-round fight. You know, you spar more rounds, and we work in drilling on your game plan more. You know, I try to take people down more in sparring and drilling, and you know, so just little stuff like that. But we've been doing the same thing that we've been successful with.
Now, is the game plan essentially to go out and frustrate him, to put him in a bad position? Because you know what he's going to do, right? He's a headhunter.
Yep.
That's exactly
what
he's going to do, and you're going to just frustrate him, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, I mean, the game plan's out there. There's the blueprint's out there. There's no, everybody knows what I'm going to do. Go out there, take him down. He's going to try to keep it on his feet where he's comfortable, you know, and that's it. You know, I want to make it look like a Cormier fight, where Cormier is grinding on him and eventually gets submission to jail, and you know, that's where I want to be. Use what I'm best at, and you know, obviously he's very good at striking. Not necessarily the most technical guy, but he throws everything into every punch, and if you get hit by it, if you get knocked out, it's jail. So I want to stay away from that for a little while.
Right. Well, and you know, and that's obviously where the fight happens, right? As we get into rounds 3, 4, and 5, it clearly becomes the Ryan Bader show, I think, at that point.
Yeah, you know, so I've been there before. I fought 5 rounds, you know, with a big guy and Vince St. Drew, a good up-and-coming guy at the time, too. So, you know, I've been there. I know what I can do. One good thing about having a bunch of decisions is you have to fight all those rounds, you know. So that's what I've been doing the last couple of fights, and you know, I've been there, done that. So I'm comfortable in just going out there and grinding it out.
Man, it's been great to watch these last 5 fights and obviously your whole career. UFC on Fox this Saturday night as you take on Anthony Rumble Johnson. One more thing before I let you bounce. I wanted to congratulate you on apparently your self-proclaimed new doctor status as you're, doing cauliflower ear surgery for UFC on Fox. Is that something you'll do for anybody, or is there like an appointment process that we need to make, or do we need to train with you?
You know, we can. I'm kind of getting more and more demand as far as in here. So if we need to make appointments, that's fine. But if you catch me and you know you have the stuff, I'm willing to do it for sure.
So I can expect a Dr. Oz like show from you on Fox Sports 1 sometime soon.
Yeah, pretty soon here. You know that video got I think 1.6 million views.
Right.
So, I think that more TV show, right?
Yeah, you've got something coming, my friend. Ryan Bader, always a pleasure. Have a great time this weekend. Cannot wait to see you win on Saturday night. Be well. And one more thing before I let you bounce. How can people get a hold of you? You want Twitter? You like Instagram? What's your deal?
I'm on all of them, Twitter, Instagram, at Ryan Bader, just my name on my social media handles. And then keep in touch. And I update it pretty frequently, so check it out.
All right, man. Be well. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
And there goes Ryan Bader. Good luck to him this weekend in UFC on Fox. The other bit of crazy news that came out this week is that Jose Aldo has come out and said, hey, I'm going to take a hiatus for, I mean, I know I've been gone for like three, and then I came back for 13 seconds. But now I'm going to take another hiatus, and I'll be back in a year for my title shot. So could you keep that thing warm, and I'll be back. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's a little surprising. I always think that he's intriguing because you don't hear about him a ton, and then he comes out and says something like this, I'm going to sit out for a year and I'll be back and have the title shot ready for me. I would actually like to see him fight somebody else. I know we've touched on this in the past, but before he does come back for a title shot, I would like to see what he looks like in the cage after, you know, not being the champ, going in, seeing how he performs without as much pressure on him. And that whole sit out for a year, I mean, it took me by surprise a little bit because it sounded like he wanted to get in and fight for the title again when he had the chance, and push Frankie back even further from getting a title shot.
Poor Frankie.
Yeah, so I was surprised that he was saying that, but I wasn't surprised that he said, I'm going to sit out, but I still want a title shot.
I'd be saying that, though. I mean, if I was taking a year off, I would be saying it with a stipulation, whether the UFC listens to him or not. That's not the question. He's saying, oh, I'll take that title shot when I get back, no matter who's in it.
Well, and on our Facebook page, Nick, Jeff had said, look, I think the year seems to make sense because a flash knockout like that, it takes you a while to kind of recover mentally, which makes a lot of sense to me. But, you know, he even says, like, business-wise, this is suicide. I mean, think for a second, guys, if you're listening to the show, what the UFC looked like in 2014. I know we said this last week, but do it again. If you, there's a photo on Twitter, go to Esther Lynn's photo, you'll see it, her Twitter account. There's a photo from 2014 with all of these guys who have belts. And as I said last week, and I'll say it again, only two of them still have said belt, right? So times change. And I think a year is a long time in this sport. And if you think about just use Conor McGregor, he wasn't around in 2013, right? And now he's going to try and win 19 belts and 19 weight classes in the next 12 months. So things change. And I think for a guy like Jose, who's had a lot of miles on that body, a year is a long time. And the sport is going to change. And that's not to say that he's going to go to wherever and sit on a beach and eat bonbons, but the sport's still going to change, and not being competitive, I think, is dangerous. And you saw that with the Dillashaw Cruz fight. If that fight's seven rounds, kids, Dillashaw is still your champ.
Well, it's just one of those things. The UFC, if you look at the year of a UFC, the UFC is in dog years. Like, they age faster. Things move by faster. If you're taking that year off, that's, you know, that's 4 years of progress in a sport that's been established for the last 100 years, like boxing. You know, you're still seeing the same thing. There's new stuff. I mean, maybe he hasn't had time to concentrate on new weapons and reformulating his game, but he's been gone for 3 years before that. So, I mean, he's aging, and he's aging fast, and the game's going to pass by.
And we didn't even get to see if he's learned anything, right? In the 13 seconds, we didn't get to see anything. So you don't even know, and that's not to say that it might have gone differently had we, but we didn't get to see it. Now we'll be a year away if we actually see it again. It would make more sense for me if he just packed it up and walked away. I'm sure that's really difficult after being dominant for a decade, but being out for a year just seems insane to me.
Well, and I wonder what his I don't know this at all, but I wonder what his financials look like. I mean, is this a year and then he looks at it again, or this is a year and I have to fight because if I don't, you know, I don't know where I'm going to be living.
Yeah, I would be surprised. I had always heard, and Andy, feel free to disagree, I'd always heard that financially he was pretty well off and pretty smart with his money because he grew up on the, you know, the dirt floor of the dojo. So it wasn't like got all this money balling out of control straight out the favela, right? It was, I have a business person, we're going to plan this whole thing out, and so I don't have to fight as much, because he's not been a very busy fighter. He's just been dominant in everything that he did.
Yeah, and you don't see him, he's not flashy by any means. And again, we see him in a different light than we see, you know, someone like Conor, again, who is from Ireland but spends a lot of time in the U.S. now, and he's more of a paparazzi figure.
Yeah,
and
owns his own McMansion in Vegas. And
has
yeah.
Bentleys and Lamborghinis, right. And you know, and who knows what he's really spending his money on, where someone like Aldo, if he did save his money right and lived a nice lifestyle in Brazil but was, you know, money conscious, he could be in position, and maybe he's just trying to make the best decision right now. And if he has the money to live off of that and made the right financial decisions, then why not?
So we'll wait and see what happens there, but that is your news for today with Jose Aldo out for a year. This weekend we get a card on Fox headlined by Anthony Rumble Johnson and Ryan Bader. Josh Barnett taking on Ben Rothwell. Uri Alcantara taking on Jimmy Rivera. And poor Sage Northcutt gets a really interesting draw, that he was supposed to fight Andrew Holbrook at 155 pounds, but on January 22nd, Holbrook gets injured, so now he's fighting Brian Barberina at 170 pounds.
Well, I did look. He is the most expensive fighter on DraftKings this weekend, so they are predicting he's going to win. According
to
that,
Brian Barberina doesn't even have a LinkedIn page or like a Wikipedia page, so you know you've got a good shot of Sage Northcutt. I think is undefeated against guys who don't have Wikipedia pages, so that's a pretty good bet. But you know, for a kid who's trying, you know, we were talking about this last week. We wanted to get into this and talk about Sage and how exciting it is to watch a kid who's genuinely just enjoying the moment. This is a tough, tough draw to be at 155, preparing to drop weight to 155 in essentially a week's notice. You're like, just kidding. You don't have to drop any weight, really. Just get to 170, right?
Well, yeah. And I mean, if you look at Barberina, my bad.
I think you're talking about a Beast Boys song.
Yeah, I think I am too.
That does have a Wikipedia page. This guy does not.
If you look at his summary is heart, toughness, and the beard. Is the description on the UFC page. So how much faith they're putting in him and how much time they're putting into him, I think it's a telltale sign that they're expecting Sage to be able to handle this one.
And I hope, you know, anything can happen. It's the fight game. I hope so, though, because if you're putting the kid on Fox, which I think you should, you want to get this kid out there and get him some eyeballs, putting him as the first fight on the main card is a great spot for Sage Northcutt. I love it. I love that he's got a killer, killer lead-in on Fox Sports 1. Safadine and Ellenberger is an amazing lead-in for that, to get you excited about those fights. So I hope he does. I hope he has a great outing, because I want to see this kid succeed. All the hatred aside that you see on the internet, I get it. But it's a meritocracy, guys. Just get over it, right? The UFC is going to do the UFC. So here we are. Josh Barnett and Ben Rothwell. This fight is probably the hardest one for me to pick, because both of these guys seem to have this uncanny ability at heavyweight, more so than I think just about any other fighter, to make something out of nothing. Like, they're absolute magicians at nothing's happening, and one dude is out cold. And this is a fun fight for me to watch, but I love Barnett's one of my all-time faves, like all-time faves, so I root for him. But Rothwell has had some pretty spectacular wins in the UFC. So your thought on this fight?
Well, to me, this is an interesting fight, because I wouldn't have been surprised if they pulled this co-main event and tried to place one of those in for that title contention that we were talking about earlier.
Right.
And so who comes out of this fight, I wouldn't be surprised if they were talking about that being at least the next title contender, depending on what happens in the next UFC event.
Yeah, I think Barnett's record is a little bit... You know, he's only fought three times in the UFC since coming back. He's 2-1, where Rothwell is on a three-fight win streak at this point. So I think if Rothwell wins, yeah, I think you want to. I mean, he's a little bit of a head case for the UFC to have to deal with. But yeah, I think you've got to talk about it. But I say that with some tentativeness because Stipe's been on this roll since 2013 and is only getting the shot because Cain's out. If Cain were to win next week, you'd have the trilogy, right? I mean, the UFC is becoming paint by numbers with these. Like, we do three in a row, and then that guy's done, and then we move on. You know, we do three in a row, and then that guy's done, and we move on. Yeah, I mean, I think that would be the logical thing. But if Barnett smashes him and gives a little bit of a different look than he did in the Travis Brown fight where he got knocked out in a minute, people like to see Josh Barnett. So when we talk about a meritocracy, I would see Josh Barnett being in contention. And I don't disagree with you that if Stipe wasn't ready, it would certainly be would have been one of these two guys. And they would have moved Sage Northcutt up, given him a better look, and put Tarek and Ellenberger on Fox.
Yeah, I think you can look at this fight. It's pretty interesting because I do think Rothwell's probably in a little bit better of a position. Both of these guys going into this fight, I have no opinion on who I think is going to win this. I think it could easily go either way.
Do you like one over the other or no?
Personally,
yeah.
Like DeChir? I mean, I would say I would go with Rothwell over Barnett. Barnett's, I don't know, he's just always kind of bugged me a little bit. I don't even really know why, and he bounces around, and he fights all over, and he's, I don't know, suspended and back. I mean, a lot of guys are suspended at one point in their career, but I just have never really become a very big fan of his. So this fight, even though it will be entertaining, hopefully, and it's not a five-round decision or three-round decision with two heavyweights because those are never fun. but what, especially with two guys that look this type of conditioning, it's, you know, when Rothwell recently, was it Rothwell or Barnett? One of them recently fought Big Country, and it went the three rounds. And it just got really sloppy towards the end. It's not my favorite thing to watch. And I don't know.
Barnett.
Yeah. I just never have been a huge fan. So, I mean, I want Rothwell to win the fight. But knowing they're both kind of, I would say, in contention towards the top of heavyweight. But I'm glad that Stipe is in here right now. I think he deserves it. Especially after the streak Arlovsky had been on. And then him stopping him in the first minute.
For sure. The main event is Ryan Bader and Anthony Rumble Johnson. Ryan Bader on a five-fight win streak, and then Rumble obviously has had trouble with people who have titles. Lost to Daniel Cormier and then beat Jimmy Manuwa, and before that was on a nine-fight win streak. So this is another fight that puts whoever wins, I think, right in there. I mean, you're going to have to wait for John Jones, you know, but after that, I think it puts whoever wins right in there. Nick, your thoughts on this fight and who's going to win? And if that person, whoever you're going to pick, wins, your thoughts based on what John Jones has been putting out in the ecosystem, like, because I know you're a huge fan, like, do either of these guys have a shot?
Well, okay, so this fight is going to be spectacular fashion knockout, or it's going to be, can Bader grind this one out? Can he make this one a wrestling match? Can he keep him on the ground? Can he start to wear Johnson out is the question that he can do it.
Because and he only has to last 8 minutes in order to do that.
8 minutes.
Yeah, because halfway through the second round, the gas tank will be empty on Rumble. So
yeah, exactly. So it's can he do that? I mean, how dynamic is Johnson? He's probably one of the most dynamic strikers in the UFC. And if he got in there with John Jones, if we're going to make that hypothetical fight, I think that he'd have a better chance at it because of Bader's unpredictable movement and his ability to knock somebody out anywhere. I think Johnson. Did I say Johnson?
Johnson.
Yeah. Bader struggles every single time he fights somebody like John Jones that's slick like that.
But it feels like, if you go back to 2013, it feels like after he lost to Glover, there was a real turning point for him mentally. Because from then on, it's all decisions that he grinds out. It seems like he got way more patient. He wasn't trying to placate the fans and get the KO or the sub or whatever. He had just figured out what his thing was, and he was going to do it. I'm not saying that that's going to work against John Jones, but I am saying when you look at this fight, I don't have any problem saying I think Ryan Bader can do this, because I'm not kidding you. It's 7-8 minutes. You know, if you can last 7 or 8 minutes, it's going to be really difficult for Rumble to keep up the pace, as because he just carries so much weight, and getting down to 205, it's hard to get oxygen to all those muscles.
Well, it was pretty funny. Nick, I think, was thrown off there, thought he missed that this was going to be an 8-minute fight when you threw that out there. First one, 8 minutes, one round.
So. Yeah, they're doing pride rules to make sure that they got the right guy to fight John Jones.
So when just recently I was watching again on Fox Sports 1 or one of the channels, old fights, and Nick was over at my house, and we actually threw it on, and it was a Rumble Johnson fight from his 170 days. And just to look at how massive he is, even at 205 still, where if he doesn't catch Bader, and I think Bader will be really smart, take out that fight with Teixeira when he was in a pretty good position and close to knocking Teixeira out and then got totally knocked out himself. And he's been pretty conservative and smart with his wrestling since then. So I picture him being really cautious and trying to get this into the end of the second round, third round. And if he does, I agree. I think that he will have the ability to win this fight by decision. But if he gets caught early in the fight, obviously we know what Rumble Johnson.
Sure. And there, I mean, he's got knockout power even when he's tired. But I think Bader's job becomes easier when it feels like it moves from a fight to a water polo match, right? Where you're just going to drown Rumble in cardio because he just can't keep up with all that weight. That's not to say that it's going to be easy, because if you let Rumble up at any point in those final three rounds, he certainly can turn the lights out on you at any point.
Yeah, if he is getting smothered, say, in the third round, and there's a chance, for whatever reason, say, there's not a lot of action, the ref stands him up,
if you've got a terrible ref, this could be a long night for Bader.
He does get up. I mean, just the pure anger that he swings with, especially if he's just been getting smothered for three rounds. If he's on bottom, just being tired, he's going to get up and be throwing the knockout bomb because he'll know that he won't be winning that fight at that time.
If I was Johnson's coach going into this fight, I would be treating this like two fights. I would be saying, round one, round two is yours. Round three, let's survive, recover, and move. And round the last two rounds, let's take it. This five-round war, this kind of fight like this, if he knows that he's going to take that mental break, maybe that's where some of his, you know, if he gasses every time at a certain point and he's never overcame that, maybe this is the time that he overcomes that, and then something else can come out of it later in the rounds and you can see a resurgence.
Well, I just think when you go back and you look at the Cormier fight, that's exactly what happened. He had Cormier dead to rights and he just couldn't finish him. And then it just let Cormier back into the fight, which Cormier and Bader to me seem very similar in that style. Cormier obviously has way more knockouts than Bader does, but very similar in that if you're going to let them back in, they're going to grind their way to win no matter what it takes. And that's what I mean, is that, and if that strategy were to work, I think that's a great idea. I just would get a little nervous that telling a fighter in the middle of a fight to dial everything back and having their brain still functioning after 11 minutes of combat sports action. I don't know about the likelihood of that, but it depends on how trainable he is, right? How great of a student he is. But that's a great plan to just kind of ride out three. As long as you did take one and two, ride out three and then be able to try and finish it in four and five.
Yeah, and a lot of that is with just a mental mindset of telling him that third round is not your knockout round is essentially how you would do that. You would say that this round is the round where you're going to touch him, you're going to move, and you're going to, I mean, to call it a recovery, it'd be like saying go sprint down the road and recover while you
right,
do it.
Yes.
But these guys are in such excellent shape that mentally that could be what it takes for him to be able to gear up for the second two rounds.
All right, and you can follow along the action online on Twitter and Facebook by searching Wow Show, and we will keep you up to date to everything, the weigh-ins on Friday night, and then the fight action on Saturday. It is Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.